But before I began preparing this message, I had one thought or another about what might make an interesting topic to speak on concerning the last great day. Thought perhaps it might highlight the significance of the eighth day. Then my daughter Abigail asked me a question. Dad, what happens on the last great day? You see, we've been talking about how trumpets pictures the return of Jesus Christ, how atonement pictures when Satan is locked away for 1,000 years. We were just beginning to discuss the Feast of Tabernacles, what that was all about. It was one of those questions that made me stop. What happens on the last great day? Well, shortly after our talk with the girls, we were over at the home of some good friends of ours. And it just so happens that this friend of mine is also giving a sermonette today on the last great day, where they're attending. That evening, we had the most in-depth discussion on the subject of the last great day I think I've ever had. What I found particularly interesting was how the observation was made regarding how little attention this day actually gets. After all, it comes right on the heels of the Feast of Tabernacles, where we're rejoicing for 7 days. How many times have we taken this day for granted? Perhaps thinking mostly of how sad we are that the feast is over. We think about how we're going to miss everyone very much. How difficult it is to say goodbye for another year. We think about our return trip. Are we all packed and ready? What time do we need to leave? Further observation was made that evening how we tend to have a lot of things on our mind this day. And the question was put forth, but what does God think about this day? I asked my girls the following night if they remembered what the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day pictured. Abigail's been especially keen about asking about the nature of the animals, especially snakes. She wants to know when they'll be changed. When we get home from the feast, will all the animals be tame? But they're still learning to remember what these days mean. So, like any good father, I set out to explain as eloquently as I could what a wonderful picture these holy days represent. I was particularly getting into my explanation of what happens on the last great day when Abigail asked the next monumental question. Do aardvarks eat ants? Well, let's reflect for a moment on what this day is all about. This day is a culmination of all God's work down through all ages. 1 Peter 1, verse 20 tells us that Jesus Christ was foreordained before the foundation of the world, and that through him we believe in God who raised him from the dead and gave him glory so that our faith and hope are in God. Pictured, performed, and proclaimed on Passover, Christ's sacrifice was the first major step in the redemption of mankind from Satan's house of bondage. From that point on, we rehearse a series of observances that remind and teach us both of past and future events monumental to the salvation and deliverance of all mankind, beginning with the smaller selection or harvest at first. So in keeping the holy days, we begin to understand the hope of God's plan of salvation for all mankind. We pause and reflect for a moment on what God must see man doing all over the world throughout all centuries. We can get sick watching 15 minutes of the evening news. However, from observance of the holy days, we are given a great hope, and we understand there is a happy ending. Let's go to Revelation 21. I'll actually begin reading in Revelation 20 in verse 11. Revelation 20, beginning verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne, and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books, The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them. And they were judged, each one according to his works. Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of the fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Now I saw a new heaven, this is beginning chapter 21, and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Then he who sat on the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said to me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said to me, It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Just a thought about there being no more sea. In the book of Isaiah, it talks about the wicked being like a troubled sea. We might also think of the wicked as being unconverted or uncircumcised in heart. Mm-hmm. Among all the significance of the eighth day, we find that the eighth day was a day for circumcision, as well as cleansing and sanctification. If we consider further that Jesus Christ is the life, then it could stand to reason that everyone must be found in him, according to his book, in order to be truly circumcised in heart. But regardless of this observation, the eighth day, or the last great day, clearly portrays a time when all mankind will be converted to God's way, and God will be all in all, with all things made new. Now back in Ecclesiastes, Solomon notes that there's nothing new under the sun. Think about that for a moment. Everything we see, every thought, every idea, every sound, every event, every miracle, every atrocity. There's nothing new under the sun. Let's go to Ecclesiastes and just read that. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. This is aptly put after reading the tremendous magnificence of the great white throne judgment, as we just read. Drop down, please, to verse 9. Verse 9 says, That which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, See, this is new. It's already been in ancient times before us. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come to pass, by the things that are to come by those who will come after. This is quite a statement to contemplate. I find it a little hard to fathom, actually. Just consider the immensity of what Solomon is recording. Our minds must be so limited in what they're actually able to comprehend. And I think this could in part be a merciful blessing. We can't know it all, not now. As Solomon indicates, there's no remembrance of former things. It's what we do with what we do know that really matters. We've been given this gift of a very special day to observe. It's not just a bookend to the Feast of Tabernacles. This day is monumental. This day pictures a day, a time, when all things are made new. Let that just settle in for a moment. All things made new. Can we even begin to imagine such a time? friend of mine stated it this way: we have the Old Testament, we have the New Testament. This day pictures the beginning of an unwritten testament. We are to be married to Christ, part of the God family, for all eternity. Another observation discussed is to think back on your wedding day, especially you husbands. Recall that feeling you felt when you first saw your bride about to walk down the aisle, perhaps on her father's arm. That feeling is tremendous. She looks so stunningly beautiful. Your mouth is dry, your knees are weak. There's an inexpressible joy in your heart or head or gut. It all kind of morphs together there. Revelation 21 portrays a new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. And this is the city that Abraham looked for. This is the vision that our fathers in the faith looked for, to the point that they would not recall the former country from which they came. Let's go to Hebrews 11 briefly. Hebrews 11 and verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Now, what about us? Do we grasp the vision that involves what this day represents? This day looks forward to the time when the tabernacle, the dwelling place of God, will be with men. Not only that, but everyone who ever lived will be raised to have an opportunity to learn God's ways. You and I are to have a part to play in that. In addition, God says He will wipe away every tear. There will be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There will be no more pain. All the former things have passed away. What a tremendous time of healing. Every year my children talk about, they even pray about this, how all these people around us don't understand what it says in the Bible. They don't listen to God. They keep Christmas and Halloween, thinking it's all okay. We tell our children how special an opportunity they've been given to understand and to keep God's holy days. Do we grasp this as adults? This is the day, picturing a time when everyone, all our neighbors, will know God. Now, I think too many times we tend to get caught up in the physical day-to-day. We get so focused on what's in the evening news, what others are doing out there. We get so focused on the next thing we need to do, or the next place we need to go. Observance of God's holy days, especially the last great day, easily fall into a box of tradition and just going through repetitive motions. Do we even know what to focus on and talk about? I heard one man that evening describe how he wondered if God might give him the job of resurrecting his son who died as a baby. And magnify that feeling to consider how God must feel about his creation, his sons and daughters by the billions. Think of the thousands, millions and billions of people who have ever lived, created in the image and likeness of God. I think it can be easy to casually read over the hundreds of thousands who died here and there throughout history. Innumerable, nameless faces where God knows their every name and much more. Right now, they're a silent witness to the price of rejecting God's way for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. In future, the prodigal sons and daughters of God restored to His family. I asked my girls again this morning about what they remembered about the last great day. This time, Hannah replied that this is the day picturing when all people will learn God's way. Abigail's answer was that this is the day when all people get washed up. For now, we must carry onward with the vision of this day firmly established in our hearts and minds. For now, we must endure for a moment the sojourning we have in this age. We must remember our calling and the gifts that God has given us, even to prepare us for our role in the fulfillment of the last great day. And yes, for the time being, aardvarks do eat ants. The meaning of this day pales into insignificance, all that we might get worked up about. This day pictures the reality when all things are made new. There is completion of the spiritual order in the plan of God for the providence of life to mankind. This is the day that looks forward to the day when God says, "It is done." This day must be very tremendous to God. Do we take it for granted?